Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the podcast here. Today, I'm joined by Amanda Brock and Salona. How are you two doing today?
Great. Really well. Thank you.
Ah, good to hear. Good to hear. We are here because we're at All Things Open this week. Maybe introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, my name is Salona Bonvald, and I'm the executive director of IEEE SA Open, which SA stands for standards. And open means all sorts of different types of open work, both open source software, open source hardware, open data, and of course, open standards. So that's what we're working on. I've been involved in different forms of open for almost 20 years now. When I started in 2004, talking about not just open source, but open government and open data and being a champion of that. And so that's kind of where I come from. But I've been doing software development for several decades now. So I have, you know, all of this kind of work near and dear to my heart.
All right. Excellent. And Amanda, you're here because you have a talk and a book.
I do. I have a talk and a book. And I guess I also like All Things Open. So we have a book that has taken 5 years in which you and I are going to do a series of podcasts around. And we're going to speak to 25 different folk who have contributed to the book. I've spent the last 5 years editing it. It goes by the very exciting title of Open Source Law, Policy, and Practice. And we'll be having a panel on Tuesday the 1st. I think it's at 11:45. Am I right? It's 11:45. As part of All Things Open. And that will be our launch of the book. So we have five amazing panelists who are going to be joining us. And they are all ladies who have written chapters for the book. Jelaine Lovejoy, Pam Chestick, Nithya Rath, Kate Stewart, and Jelaine Lovejoy. And I'll be moderating that session, and it's billed as Ask Us Anything. So the All Things Open folks will be gathering questions over the next couple of days, and we will have a bit of fun answering any questions, I guess any questions full stop, but primarily questions I'm assuming about the legal topics, policy topics covered in the book.
Oh, excellent. And you gave me a copy of the book to look at here, and it's very thick.
It is very thick, and it was very tiring.
Ah, yes, I can imagine so, because there's a lot of really small, large words.
There's a lot of really small, large words that I've read 5 or 6 times from front to end, and it's almost 600 pages long. So let that be a learning. Writing pieces and even writing a book are one thing. Editing is a whole different ballgame, and I do not advise it.
I can imagine. Now, both of you, I know you've come to All Things Open before, but Amanda, is this your first time at All Things Open?
No, this is my third.
Third time at All Things Open. Okay.
I haven't been here since before lockdown.
Oh, so it's been a while then. Yes. Okay. And why All Things Open?
I like the posters.
You like the posters, the spacemen?
Yeah, I really love those. I've got them framed up at home.
Yeah, the t-shirts are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, right? You know, good t-shirts, good swag, I guess that's...
Oh, it's better than swag. It is absolutely unique to ATO, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Posters like those.
Yeah.
No, no one does this.
Yeah.
No, I like ATO because it is, they practice what they preach in regards to being open. Like the entire process is very open. How they bring everybody in is very open. They try to cover a lot of different topics. So they are very developer and program centric. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is I've been talking about role diversity for several years now. And now we have two other speakers speaking on role diversity at this conference, one today and then one on Nithya on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's expanding out. And they've also got, you know, different tracks now, too, that exist, like the business track,
yeah.
You know, which is nice to have. And then they're doing some different stuff in regards to machine learning and hardware. And they've kind of always had the community track, though, which was really nice. But it is nice to also sit there and see that community now is meaning more than just developers. Because of this focus today on, like, diversity, equity, and inclusion, they're going, oh, how do we get more others involved in regards to this than it was previous.
Yeah, and I've been another like you for a couple of decades because my background is that I was a lawyer in various companies. I started in open source in Canonical beginning of 2008. And I guess that the others, the lawyers, the governance people, the people who do documentation, the community leaders, all the people that make open source work who are not the engineers have a role to play And it's really important, I think, across the board that their jobs are understood. And we're seeing that more and more as the adoption of open source goes beyond the traditional. So as we see the mainstream using open source, they'll understand that legal definition, you know, OSI approved license, put it on a repo like GitLab or GitHub. But they won't understand how to take contributions, how to build communities or be part of communities, all the governance, good technical hygiene. And I think that's where all the people that fit around the engineering and development community come in.
Yeah, totally. Because what, you know, with the stuff that we've, like, the few rules that we've set at IEEE SA Open have been basically because of my own personal battle scars, because I didn't have a legal background. I was primarily a really good software developer and manager. You know, I'd worked in the gaming industry for many years before that. And so I knew how to do things like Q&A and how to do good architectural design and things of that nature, which wasn't always done in open source. You know, they were very good with developer to developer, but never very good at in regards to the user portions. And so with a lot of these new learnings, I feel like we're bringing that into open source more and more as open source needs to become more and more production ready. You know, and production ready to me is way more than security. And Amanda and I have discussed this a lot.
And it goes not just beyond the, I mean, what Solana's talking about there is the sort of technical side. I tend, because I spent so long being a lawyer, to pick up on that. But Matt, it's also people like yourself, right? Community leaders, marketing, sales. People who do those jobs around open source really have to understand the differences and the nuances, or we're not going to have open source in 10 years.
Yeah, design, artists.
Yeah.
Even middle management.
Matt's trying to say something. He's not getting a word in.
I'm not trying to. I was listening intently.
With Amanda and I, that's a rough crowd.
No. No, I think you're right. The evolution, if you, you know, you said you've been here for several years. When you look at the number of sessions, the number of people attending, the variety of sessions, the topics that are covered, you can see that evolution in the space, and you can see how things have really not only diversified, but you have, you know, gone into these other areas that classically wouldn't have been covered. You know, when we started off, it was code, right? So everything was very technical. Now we're talking about how to build communities. We're talking about how, like you said, to do sales marketing. I'm giving a talk on how to build a support organization.
Right.
So these are important topics because more and more businesses are not only turning to open source, but they're looking to commercialize the open source side of things.
Matt, you just said businesses there. One of the things that's really interesting and that we're seeing a lot in the UK as well, and I guess across Europe, is that this is not just about businesses anymore. Because of the scale of adoption that we've got in open source, we're seeing it across the public sector. So the infrastructure, we deal with the apps mainly as consumers, but the infrastructure sitting behind that, the digitalization infrastructure of our roads and bridges, our hospitals, our schools, all of that stuff, our national infrastructure is now built in open source. And it's really interesting to see talks like Remy, I'm going to get his surname wrong, but
Dick Cosmaker.
Mm-hmm. And Melissa Eggleston talking about open source and the digital service at cms.gov. And in the UK, we've been engaging a lot with GDS's founder, Francis Maud. And, you know, I know that's been replicated across the world, but that was always intended to be open first. So, you know, helping those folks start to engage and understand all of this governance and the whole picture of what open source is really important, I think.
Yeah, totally. And that's one thing that we kind of focus in on at IEEE. We're 501c3, not a C6. And a C3 is membership driven, and we do a lot more where, you know, a lot of our membership comes from academia, and we focus a lot on nonprofits and governments and doing good for humanity. And so we're very not caring about the corporatism, the corporate side of things. We're much more focused on those other different aspects. And, you know, like I said, I've been doing the open government thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. In 2004, people thought I was a crazy person. Like, I was...
So I don't know, they still do.
But but now I'm a crazy person with vision. So...
Oh, if you could see Matt's face.
It's all good. It's all good.
He's got some great dimples though, right?
Yeah, totally.
We'll have to make sure we get a picture of that.
Oh, no, it's going red. We better cut that bit.
But so with looking towards that space, you know, that's how come standards has come in, right? Is because you can't really work with government and policy without having some form of standards and looking in regards to that. And you can't do that. And not only that, but they won't do it either if you haven't gone and taken care of all the stuff that, you know, she talks about in the book in regards to law, policy, and practice. You do need to have all those things, and they do care a lot about getting that stuff sorted.
Just going back to the book, it is very long. I mean, I can't tell you. It takes 4 days to read from start to finish if you're me, because I've done it multiple times, and I don't expect any other living being to do that. So I spent quite a bit of time with the original indexers trying to make the index practical so that it will have the kind of terminology that our people or people who are coming into our source might want to go and look up. And it's also available not just for sale, but it's available as open access thanks to an organization called the Veatch Foundation. And they've paid for the open access non-commercial. Note that it's open access non-commercial, which is the best, at least in the UK, you can get with a publisher. And also they've paid for some giveaway copies. So we're giving away 50 at ATO. We'll be at FOSDEM and many other conferences next year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're going to give away a lot of these books.
Yeah. So I think they're £75 sterling. They're $1,000. They should be $1,000 with the work I put in.
No,
they're $100 on Amazon, but they're not out on Amazon until, in the US anyway, until I think January. It's 2023 that it says. But we'll have the open access available to people. We'll be giving away a lot of copies. And also there is a flyer, which I've asked the conference organizers to add to the website, which will give a 30% discount. I think you can order for the US on that as well, and that's direct with the publisher.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad then that Amazon didn't give me my book yet, so now I'll go use my 30%
coupon.
Yeah, be cheap.
I would.
So there's a whole section on the economics of open source, the business revenue models in open source. I mean, just tons and tons of different, you know.
The standards chapter is going to be really interesting because Knut Blind at Fraunhofer, his colleague, Nicholas Thoma, and Marco Bohm, who most of you will know, Marco's a big KDE guy. So they have updated a report they did for the European Commission a few years ago with this chapter. Mm. And obviously standards, and I say obviously, you may not know this, standards and open source, standard essential patents, FRAM, really controversial right now.
Very.
And that chapter is sort of groundbreaking, and a lot of people will be very keen to see what they've said in there. Obviously, I'm not going to tell you.
Well, tell me what the controversy is.
The controversy is that when you distribute patents that are found fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory, it sounds like a good idea because everybody pays the same, but everybody pays. And there's a friction between that model and open source. And in the telco sector, what we're seeing is a mass adoption of open source software. And it's unsurprising that incumbents don't like mass adoption of open source software in their sectors if it disrupts their business model. And it's disrupting this economic model where standards are used a lot in telco, and a small number, I think it's seven companies own 70% of the standard essential patents in those telco standards, that they're really having their business model disrupted by it, and that they're really fighting back to almost redefine open source. So there's a lot of FUD at the moment. So that's a really important area. Merck has also written the economics chapter, which I think is excellent. Carlo Piano, who many of you all know in Europe, has written about antitrust and competition, important stuff. There's open hardware and open data in there from Andrew Katz for the first time. Mark Radcliffe talks about blockchain, Lithia Ruff and OSPOs. I could obviously go on because there's 25, but it gives you a taste.
Yes. Well, I'm interested in controversy because people like controversy, and then that gets viewers on the podcast. So we want controversy.
Yeah,
so that's
standards
why
are definitely
talking
controversial.
About podcast controversy.
Definitely controversial. And then some of the commercial stuff, you know, I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of years, especially when I was locked up during COVID, thinking about open source. And of course, we saw the whole open search, elastic search stuff happen during that time. So I went off and tried to research and chronologically catalog what happened around some of the shifts away from open source and the FUD around that. I also went back to 2008 when we had the first report on, you know, open source and revenue generation, at least it's the first that I can find, and looked at what the business models are. There are few and far between for, you know, for a lot of folk, the business models and open source is the holy grail. but I suspect we'll also see something that was recently described to me by the original CTO from Government Digital Services in the UK as a new business model. I'm not sure if it's a new business model, but I think it's a new way of generating revenue for open source, which is thinking about it as a digital public good and starting to look at joined up funding from governments to make sure that the money going, or the necessary money going into open source is going there and going to the right people.
Yeah, and the digital public good is very exciting for me to see because it's something that I've been trying to champion under many different names for at least 20 years now, which is where governments could pull their resources together to improve the ecosystem that exists there. The hard problem is government processes, right? How does procurement work? How do they decide this? How do they decide which open source project to give money to? You know, foundations themselves struggle with that on a regular basis. And so they have a really hard time figuring it out. But with the digital public goods, you know, for example, there's this great tool called Big Blue Button, which is a video conferencing tool that's basically, honestly, it had more features than Zoom 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And but the French and Canadian governments invested a fair amount of money at it for school children. And then suddenly COVID happened and they're like, woohoo, you know, we're sitting pretty because we've already got something that's GDPR compliant, that's OSINT compliant, that has, you know, all of these different things in regards to privacy and how you set it up and of that nature. And that's a huge boost to something like that. And not only that, but it prevents some of the other problems sometimes that open source deals with in regards to corporatism. Way too often, open source projects can be dominated by a single corporation or a small group of corporations, which prevent it sometimes from evolving to where it needs to evolve to. Because like a corporation is like, oh no, you can't add that feature because you're going to disrupt our business model if you add that feature. So we don't want you to do that. It's very problematic for them. So one kind of strange thing that people don't realize affects in regards to IP is open source's distribution model in the first place. Half the time, like we have a really hard time finding numbers like Amanda has done because you don't have to register your open source. We don't know who is always running it, when, where, and why. I think one of the reasons open source ends up being as ubiquitous as it is the distribution model. So what happens is, you know, anybody can download it, anybody can send it around. That's also sometimes why we have the security problems with it too, right? Because we don't know who's installed it where and who's included it into a software package and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you want to sit there and try to now go back in a bunch of IP in regards to it and be restrictive on it, how is that going to work, right? How are you suddenly going to bill these people? That means you're going to be spying on them, right? You're going to have to do something along those lines, or, you know, there's problems with it.
Like, I think there's a couple of things there that you've said that need unpacking. So the first is the idea of corporatism. I don't have a problem with a small number or a group of companies collaborating. I think that's okay, and I think it creates different kinds of open source. There's recently a piece of law in Europe that tried to define commercial open source, and we've been talking to the director there because you can't, because these days so much contribution comes from corporates. There's no such thing as open source that's created just in the community of individuals or just in the community of corporates.
Totally.
It's mashed up now. And then when it's used as creators, we don't care how you use it, and the responsibility sits with the user. At law, at least. So if you're a government, if you're a company using it, that's down to you. You're responsible. And where that sort of risk allocation shifts, and when I'm talking about risk allocation, what I mean is that it's open source is distributed without liability by the creators, and they have no responsibility. The user is responsible for the environment or the use case they choose to put it into. It shifts when money changes hands, and it shifts where there's contracts or where you buy a version, say a tight left or a red hand type version that's been sanitized or comes with some liabilities. So there's that corporate piece and what is commercial open source. And then the second piece that Salona's referring to there is data. And at Open UK, we've been running with a report for the last couple of years called State of Open. We've done a couple of UK surveys, and we've actually worked, Matt, with someone I know you know well, Avi
Avi Press at Scarf, and Avi started to provide us with some really useful data that Scarf has. Not only useful because not many people have got the data on how many downloads of open source happen, a lot of it's behind closed walls, behind firewalls, but also because he's cut it for us, he's saved it for us or collected it for us for the UK specific as well as globally. So one of the issues we've had is getting data for our geography, because any data that is available often hasn't been collected in that way, particularly post-Brexit. But secondly, just finding data about open source is hard, and the kind of data that's used for things like total cost of ownership as an economic model, this kind of stuff that's in the book, is hard to come by, and it doesn't always really even work for open source. So people like Avi and Scarf giving us that download data, getting survey results talking about investment to try and show how much the value of open source is, has been really important. But Salone is absolutely right that the problem is the data is not available because we come from a tradition of not registering. You know, we're mostly about freedom and openness, mm-hmm. and we want people to just take our work and use it, which is why, you know, for me, having the book open in terms of open access was really important, and I put a lot of work into finding that funding. You know, I wish it was entirely open, but I can't. I can only get non-commercial as the best I can do. But that's because you come from that tradition of sharing and knowing that other people will build on your work and do other good stuff with it, right? And that's what we all want. But I don't care. I don't want to know who's using it. You know, and that's how most people with open source software are. But then as you evolve and become more sophisticated, that can be problematic. And it's problematic because we want to prove our value. Because we want to, you know, from my perspective at least, I don't care. I don't want to, you know, spy on people or know what they're up to. But I do want to know things. And we need it to not just demonstrate a value, but to counter reporting around things like the Log4j, Shell4j CVE last year. So that security breach apparently affected 3 billion platforms. And that's incredible. That shows you that a tiny piece of code that a couple of people maintain has an impact on 3 billion platforms.
So there's a fine line there, right? Because you want the metrics, you want, you know, the data, but you also don't want to violate anybody's privacy or their personal information. How do you walk that line?
With difficulty.
Yeah.
I mean, because I understand from an open source perspective, we're very private people. We value our privacy. We don't want, you know, people collecting information on us.
We respect other people's. We respect other people's. And honestly, I think we're also more educated than normal in regards to knowing how well that stuff can penetrate. Because, you know, it's just the joke about technical people not wanting a bunch of technology in their lives because they do understand how vulnerable so much of it is.
And I also think there's different approaches. We've been trying to evolve calculations that are more forward-looking and modern rather than looking at total cost of ownership, mm-hmm. numbers of developers or numbers of lines of code. And I think there's a lot more work to be done on that that's more front-end loaded. So looking at the value generated by that distribution, as opposed to how much goes into building it, right? Because when you have a lot of volunteer time and costings, it's different. It's difficult to use traditional measures.
It is. It is difficult to use traditional measures. And not only that, but it also ends up being, you know, but it's hard because, like, when you're working with corporations and governments and foundations and things of, and grant institutions and things of that nature, they always ask for those numbers.
They do.
It's so painful.
We've started to use different kinds of metrics with them, and we're, you know, it's gradual, but mm-hmm. we are seeing mm-hmm. change.
Yep.
And we don't give, like at Open UK, we won't give companies that sponsor us or donate to us. We just will not give them individuals' data and metrics about those individuals.
Yep.
So we have not taken money off people who insist on having that. And I think there's a shift going on in tech that we've seen over the last decade to accepting open source. There's just a bit of education that goes beyond the engineers who, in a digitalized world, are able to just bring open source into the businesses on those standard licenses to the people who make the decisions around the board tables. I don't know how we got onto this, but I do think there is a shift there.
Yeah. Well, you know, like when I was at PayPal, for example, one of the things that I did is I worked with middle management a lot. And I worked with them on how do you propose the fact that your people are working on these things to upper management, and what does that look like, and how can you formulate some of that to sit there and kind of show the impact. I learned from Denise Cooper to always keep a big picture, because to be quite honest, that's all the C-levels care about anyhow. But being able to go in there and do that was very powerful for a bunch of those middle managers, because they wanted to be involved in open source. But one reason they had, kind of kiboshed it previously is because of the fact that they did have such a hard time reporting on it, and they did feel like things were out of their control, and, they didn't know what to do. But once we went through and did the whole inner sourcing, open sourcing re-education, they were able to do that, and then adoption, became part of the norm.
And go back to all things open, you're starting to see more business-related topics, as we said at the beginning, and there's one called Openly Supporting Open Source by a lady called Claire Knight. No idea what she's going to be talking about, but it's a great title, and that's the kind of stuff that we're thinking about at the corporate level. I don't know about you, Sana, I like the two-for-one idea as well.
The
two-for-one, yeah, they've got two-for-one sessions. No, they've got DevOps, they've got two-for-one sessions, you're all things open, where I think you get two speakers with slightly different topics that align who they've pulled together. That's a great idea.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to, I have to admit, to several of the business track ones, like the consumer to contributor, and talking about how to do it as a competitive advantage. That's from Brendan over at GitLab. And then I'm also looking forward to Keith's from the Open Invention Network about talking about the value of the community. Stephen Wally gave a great talk at the Open Source Summit Europe on the need for open source ecosystems to truly grow past.
What are you looking forward to, Matt?
What am I looking forward to? I think it's just meeting with everybody individually. I think an opportunity like ATO is just to meet with colleagues and peers, people you haven't seen, be able to sit down and talk to them and learn about what they're doing. I think that goes beyond just the sessions. The sessions are important, but I think it's more about the connections and the networking.
Yeah, I agree. It's getting time with people. It's really important. I think the thing that I like best about All Things Open isn't the posters, is the fact that it's a community-focused event, but actually these days that community also brings enterprise with it, and now we're seeing more and more the public sector coming on board, and it's exactly the kind of ethos that we're hoping to put into a new conference. Open UK will be leading State of Open Con, which we are hoping to announce in the next couple of weeks formally, but which will be in London at some point in the first half of next year.
Awesome.
And I should say, while we've got Salona on the podcast, that we have IEEE on board as our headline sponsor for that. Already.
Oh, look at that. You're already lining up sponsors.
Yes. Yeah, yes. We have. So this will be happening.
Well, IEEE, we just did a thing called Serious Open Source for Humanity, where, our tracks are more along the lines of what, of taking things forward. It is talking about governance. It is talking about standards. It is talking, we're talking about policies. We're talking about legal. We're going for all of those things that I consider to be, the next leg up on the maturity model for open source to go through. I feel like we started out scrappy, and then we started adding in corporate, and we had to figure out how to bring that in correctly without killing ourselves and doing stuff of that nature. And now I feel like we're going in, and now we're trying to work on how do we work better with nonprofits and government and academia and things of that nature. And I feel like after we get to that point, then we'll be at, the global maturity level I would like to see open source at.
I like that term, maturity model. And I think some of the work that we all do is really to help other people on their open source journey and to help them get to that maturity. Nice to have you. Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we hope everyone will come and join us at All Things Open this week. We hope to see you there. Stop by. Amanda, you've got a booth, right?
We have a booth, an Open UK booth. And actually, I was going to be early for my own panel session. It's at 12:45 on the 1st, on Tuesday the 1st. And our booth will host the book signing afterwards. But Carla Gagini, who some of you will know from Cloud Native, where she's the chair of the marketing committee, and Michelle Anger, who has joined Open UK as our second full-time employee in the last few weeks, will be hosting that booth, and I'll be sort of dropping in and out of it opposite the registration desk. So I hope to meet quite a few of the folk at All Things Open this week. So meet some new people.
Awesome. IEEE SA Open, we also have a booth, and I'm going to be speaking on open work. One of the very last sessions on Tuesday. open work being an initiative that Open at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, is working on in regards to what do we mean by just the general definition of open. And it's because we've got open data, open source, open hardware, open standards, open, you know, all, it's getting monikerized. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, we wrap them up as open technology, so software, hardware, data within Open UK, and we think that you can subset everything else. Like standards permeates it all, but it is difficult with all these definitions, right?
Yeah. And so I'm basically bringing together people to talk about the ethos as to what we're trying to capture on that. I'm not saying that we're done, because we're not, but maybe that we could talk about levels and what that actually means to be open.
Okay.
It's kind of like derived off of, I did a bunch of stuff on citability back in 2004. And, you know, what does it mean to be citable? Because people hadn't really thought about that yet in regards to all the online technology, because things kept going away, right? So citations were based off of publications, and it was a problematic, but doing things of that nature, what's that going to look like next for open work?
Awesome. Well, and we hope you will stop by, see us all. We're all here, and we would love to see you in person. Until next time, we'll see you then.
Thanks.
Thanks, Matt.